You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Welcome to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE. Today is going to be a bit of a different episode. I'm going to be discussing a big news topic that happened very recently in the world of photography and sort of going into what that means for photography and is this sort of the end of photography as we know it. To start it off, as always, what I've been up to. So personally, I finished my uni work. Hopefully going to pass this. You got no idea how much this stresses me out because this is my last unit or watch, which will hopefully be my last unit for uni. This is my second last assignment. It's a group one. You know, with group assignments, always so unpredictable what can happen. You know, what the tutor marks you for, that kind of stuff. And the worst part of it is, with this unit, they only offer it in the second semester of the year. So if I was, touch wood, hopefully not, don't want to fail it, I could only do it again this time next year, which delays graduation by a year as well, which would just mess everything up. Otherwise, what's been happening in terms of photography, something very exciting has happened. Last episode, I did mention I sold the Samyang. In that time, there was a 20% off sale, which means that DigiDirect, you know, there's a local store here in Australia, had the Sigma Art for a price that I was willing to pay with that 20% off compared to their jacked up usual price. So I am the proud owner of the Sigma 85mm f1.4 Art DN lens. So just to give a bit of a like first impressions on it, when I first got it, picked it up out of the box, felt it, I could tell it definitely does feel heavier compared to the Samyang. It doesn't feel significantly heavier, but it does feel heavier. At the same time, it feels solid. It's not like a just pure heavy, but feels just plasticky sort of thing. The Samyang didn't feel that plastic. It just didn't, something about it doesn't have that quality feel to it that the Sigma does. In terms of image quality, I got myself a beautiful copy. It seems to be well centered, no issue with that. Tack sharp, wide open from corner to corner. It's absolutely amazing. Autofocus wise, not that the Sigma lens I used on my Sony, the 35 1.4 Art, was bad, but this one just seems really, really, really good. Like, honestly, I would put it at native performance. I went for a walk to the park the other day just taking some shots. I would say the only limiting factor in autofocus would be my A7 III's tracking because it doesn't have real-time tracking. That would be the only thing limiting me with this body and lens combination. Otherwise, it tracks everything. Autofocus is spot on every time. There is zero complaints. This lens is something I'm going to absolutely love. The rendering on it is actually very nice. The bokeh is beautiful. I really, really just want to get out and use it more. We've had a lot of rain the past week and a half, and this whole coming week is meant to be raining too, so it looks like I won't be able to go out and shoot yet. I'm actually even going to try different stuff with this, like some cityscapes from Kirribilli here in Sydney, shooting the city, so it'll be a lot tighter and maybe do a panorama of that. But yeah, once I get enough images and that, I'm going to do a review on it. It probably will take a few months, I would say. I don't want to rush it. I want to really use this lens as much as I can, get as many good shots as I can. And speaking of reviews, the 35mm f1.8 review will be out 1 week from release of this podcast. So I've pretty much finished writing it mostly. I got to add in a little bit more fluff in there, but the audio version of the review is all done and ready to release. I've edited it and everything. That's going to come out as a special podcast. You're going to get one next week and then my usual one the week after. But that's like a bonus episode. It's more about the review. No news, no what I've been up to, just purely all about the review. Now let's get into the news. There's not a huge lot of news that I'm going to talk about because the main big news is something that's the main topic. The first news topic is Yongnuo, who are mostly known for their flash, have released a 35mm f2 lens for the Sony E-mount. Now this lens sort of looks interesting. It's 7-blade aperture, which is a bit low compared to what most current lenses have. Most are around 9 blades. It has 9 elements in 8 groups, which isn't too bad. When you look at the size of the lens, it is tiny, and it's listed at under $150, so that will probably be why it's sort of got a more sort of basic construction internally in that. For me, it's not something I would buy. If I needed, you know, 35, I'd still go for my current one or even the 35 Art. If you wanted to experiment with a 35mm lens, then this would be a great option, something that would sort of let you spend a bit of money to see what it's like, but at the same time not waste money. You could even just buy this lens rather than renting one, if that renting is an option where you live. The next announcement is the DJI Osmo Pocket 2, which has been announced and is going to be released soon. So if you're not familiar with the original Osmo Pocket, it's something I own. It's a stabilized gimbal camera. It's really actually quite good. It only weighs 100. This new one only weighs 117 grams and has 140 minutes of battery life. I don't usually talk about video, but it does do 4K footage, I believe 4K 30 and 4K 60 now. It may seem like something that's more aimed for video, but to be honest, it's actually really good to carry when you travel. The photos it actually produces are really nice. Apparently, it has a new 20mm f1.8 lens, so obviously in low light, it'll be good. And photos can be captured in the full 60 megapixel width or 64 megapixel images using this high resolution mode. Now, when we travel, we mainly use it for video, but we do, when my girlfriend travels, she uses it for photos more than anything because of the quality. The way it exposes the images, it actually has decent dynamic range because you can shoot panoramas in DNG, and I've done that and actually edited them after, and they turn out really, really nice. You can also shoot time lapses on them. The main thing I had an issue with the first one when it came to time lapses was it was very limited with how many seconds you could do. It was only 2 or 3, which is a bit longer. Whereas I wanted one that could do 1 second intervals. So that way I can, you know, when I go out to shoot, I take that with me and I do a time lapse while I'm busy doing my shooting. So I, you know, have both sunset time lapse plus that. I'll probably do that again next time I go out to shoot, see how it turns out. Maybe do a compilation of them all the time lapses I do. But yeah, I wouldn't sell my current one for this new one, mainly because like, I don't see the point. It does look better, but it's not something that I'm willing to spend the money to, and especially go through the hassle of buying and selling just to get this new one. So yeah, it's not really worth it for me. Well, that's that for the brief news topics. Now we'll be on to our main topic, which will be the bit more interesting. So if you don't know, this week, Adobe had announced a huge update for Photoshop. They did update Lightroom as well, adding that color grading, which I mentioned in the last thing. But the main sort of interesting part about this upgrade from Photoshop is they've included a slew of AI powered features like neutral filters, sky replacement, refined hair selection, and more. So this is a massive thing. It may not sound much, but I think it was quite needed because if you're not familiar, there's another program called Luminar Skylum, I believe it's called, which is very, very focused on all this AI technology, especially with sky replacement. I've seen previews of it and it does do really well in terms of the sky replacement. I haven't actually tried messing around with the Photoshop one yet, but I'll definitely give it a try, but I'll go into that in a bit more later on. So with the neutral filters, so what it is, apparently Adobe describes it as a major breakthrough in creativity. So these can do stuff like skin smoothing, style transfer, options to colorize and remove JPEG artifacts. There's a whole bunch of different stuff that they can do. If you look at the preview, someone with, say, wrinkles everywhere, bad skin, like myself, uses it on them, it just completely transforms their skin, makes it clear. So that is very, very big. Sky replacement, obviously that's pretty self-explanatory. You got like a photo landscape or something, you want to swap out the sky. From what I've seen in the preview previously, they have their own preset skies. Apparently there's 25 to choose from, but you can actually upload your own sky and include your own one in it. So with refined hair and object aware refine, obviously this one is to me very, very beneficial. If you have, you know, you want to swap out the background on a portrait, or even if you have an object, a product that you've taken a photo of that doesn't have a very straight line, you know, easy to select border, you can use this to refine it. So this one is probably one of the best ones that I'm most excited for in that regards. Apparently there's somewhat of an app store as well for Photoshop plugins, which, you know, would be very welcome. I've never used or bought a plugin. I've tried Topaz Denoise before. That actually does work really well. And there's one that I have always wanted to get, but haven't. It's called JPEG Mini. The compression it does is really good. You don't see any loss, but the sizes are much, much smaller. So now that we've covered sort of what this update is about, now it brings up the question, what does this mean for photography? So in terms of some of these updates, such as, I mainly focus on one, so the object aware selection, that kind of stuff doesn't really change anything. Neutral filters, it kind of doesn't change a huge amount. It's actually quite beneficial in my mind because at the moment we have stuff like frequency separation. If you're not aware of that, you put the colors and the texture on separate layers and you can edit someone's skin. So whenever I use that, I pretty much have to use that with how bad my skin is, sadly, but that can change it. When you see some of the previews, you can do this. of what you can do with that one. It is a bit changing. You can choose, change the way their facial shape is. Like, it's sort of like liquify in a way, but a lot easier because it's done through AI. The main one that I'm sort of wondering how it's going to affect photography now that it's becoming even more prevalent is sky replacement. So obviously Luminar have been doing this. Luminar is a popular software, but I don't think they have the popularity or the reach that Adobe and Photoshop does. Like Photoshop, you know, even if you don't use Lightroom, you generally would still use something like Photoshop because there's so much stuff that you can do in there in terms of, you know, image manipulation, which has been done for a long time. And to be honest, even I do it to an extent, but I've never really gone in on sky replacement. The main reason for that is when I do any kind of image manipulation, I have disclosed it. Say when I change the colors of trees, I said, yeah, I changed the color of this to see what it would look like. In terms of sky replacement, I do bracket my images. So in a way, I kind of do it. Like for example, if I go to shoot a cityscape, I'll do one exposure for the sky, one exposure for the water, and then sort of do it that way. I have had times where, you know, you take what a technique for cityscapes you can do is you take one photo of the sky when it's still sort of sunset and nice. If you, especially if you've got some decent lighting, or say if it's daytime and there's some clouds, like, or maybe not daytime, just before sunset and blue hour, when you got nice cloud streak in the sky, you do your long exposure of the clouds, then get that. Then you just sit in the exact same spot, same focus and everything. Wait for sunset. I mean, blue hour sort of, once the lights are all down, you know, once it's dark and the city buildings are on and they're more bright and prevalent, then you take a photo of the city, then you add the two together. And then you've pretty much, you know, got like a bright city lights, but still nice sunset sky. For me, you know, like I said, it comes down to sort of what you see as ethical and what, but that's taken on the same day within the same bracket of timing in the same place. So for me, that's not too much of an issue. Now, if I was to take city shot one day and then go take the sky shot another day, say, you know, a week, 2 weeks later, even the next day later, I wouldn't sort of do that because for me, it's not all in the same time. I try and sort of limit myself in that sense. I wouldn't say limit myself, but I have that sort of restriction in terms of, you know, like ethics on it. One thing the main issue is as well, with sort of stuff like, well, my main issue is we won't know what photos are real and what photos are fake unless people disclose it. So people could upload photos, you know, that look like the most beautiful cityscape, beautiful landscape. But for all we know now, because this tool is so powerful, was that even taken by themselves? Did they take it comes into image theft as well. Did they steal the foreground from someone and the sky from someone else and just merge it themselves in Photoshop and, you know, make it look like it's their own image? It creates a whole lot of sort of ethical issues for photography, and it sort of pulls away from the history of photography in a way, or, you know, the how photography has been so far, and pushes it more towards sort of digital art in a sense. There's a few things we could sort of do to make sure this sort of doesn't become an issue. One of them is obviously disclosing if the image has been manipulated. Obviously this happens all the time already now without people disclosing it. So I, in my full honesty, I don't think people will disclose it. You may get some that will, but not many. The one thing that I think that will really sort of let us know is there was a website or a tool not long ago, I remember reading in the news, that can actually let you know if an image has been manipulated. I think even Instagram or something was notifying people if an image had been manipulated. So stuff like this, if that AI can get built into the websites we use, such as, you know, Flickr, Instagram, or whatever, that would be a great step. So, you know, say you upload a photo that's been manipulated, but you try to pass it off. If it has some kind of flag on there letting users know it has been manipulated, would be a great thing. One thing I would love to see is any kind of raw processor. So Photoshop, Lightroom, Luminar, Capture One, they actually embed something into the EXIF data to say that, you know, this image has been manipulated, and make it something that sticks regardless. So even if the person tries to remove the EXIF data, have it being stuck in there so that they can't. So that way we know exactly this image has been manipulated. This comes into my issue with sort of Instagram again. I really want a new site. So I love Flickr. I still use Flickr. I've actually, you know, after watching The Social Network, I never really liked using Instagram, but I've actually been wanting to remove it from my phone now, even after using that, because so many fake notifications come up on my phone. For example, you know, I got a notification the other day that I have two accounts, Photos by DELW and Mr. Miyapus, which is my sort of more personal one that only my friends sort of add. That's the one that I sort of use more than anything, but it's more just messaging people, you know, talking to people on there in the DMs. But Instagram notified me as Photos by D. Lee that Mr. Meowpuss has just mentioned me. But obviously I know I did mention it because I am Mr. Meowpuss as well. They do this kind of stuff to trick you and get you to open the app and use it more. Because, you know, they just want you on there, want you looking at the ads, making money, that kind of stuff. That's why I prefer Twitter. Twitter is the lesser of the two evils, but I'm going off the main topic here. But we need a site that sort of really has different aspects. So if Instagram does do that whole notifying you a photo has been sort of manipulated, we need that part of that for Instagram. It would be great to have the user base in a sense from Instagram, like the amount of users that are actual photographers, but then have the quality of Flickr, have the groups, have the community aspect, and then embed all this kind of anti-manipulation, notifying you when a photo's been manipulated kind of AI stuff into it, which would work really, really well. In terms of if I'm going to see myself using these tools in the long term, in terms of sky replacement, I don't think I will. I might play around with it, see what I can create. I think the futuristic sort of photos, like the Petapixel article I've linked, if you look through it, they have some examples. So there's one where like all these planets, you know, moons above some, I don't know where it is, like the Maldives or something. That kind of stuff I think looks okay. And that's more digital art in that sense. But I wouldn't do it like, you know, Sydney Harbour with some crazy sky like the Aurora Borealis or that kind of stuff. I wouldn't do that kind of stuff personally. I prefer to keep it as real as possible. Even me, I still try and shoot in camera as much as possible. I do my composites, but that's mainly for product photography. Like for example, when I got my 85 art, I did a photo of it sort of just standing up straight and one of it on its side. So you can see both the front element and the sort of housing of the lens all in one photo. So it comes and poses the big question, does this mean photography as we know it is doomed? And is this sort of the end of photography? I still think that there's a good chance, you know, people will still stick to the original nature of photography and what it was about and not just sort of merge that with digital art. And if you look at it, people still try to go on about film and shoot film, and the purest kind of thing reckon that film is the only way to go. So that'll probably happen with, you know, photography as we know it now. Even though digital art and image manipulation will become more and more prevalent, there will be a whole group of people, probably the older people like myself, that are like, nope, have to do it the pure way, have to get everything right in camera, none of this digital art sort of stuff. Even some younger people, it's like making it sound like all younger people who pick up photography or something will always manipulate their images. There'll be many people who will do it the pure way and do it as actual photography, not digital art. For me, it doesn't so matter what people do. If they want to do, you know, digital art, if they want to do photography, that's their choice. Just don't try and pass one off as the other. It has to be upfront about it. If you create digital art, you know, keep it that way, make it that way. Be honest about that. Don't try and pass it off as something else. That's just sort of my main stance on it. So I hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you do, like, you can let me know what you think of this. Are you going to use these features? Do you think photography is doomed? Reach out to me on Twitter or comment on thephotographerenthusiast.com and let me know exactly what you think of this. So as I said, next week, I'll be out with my 35mm f1.8 review, so keep your eye out for that. Keep your ears out for that too, since it'll be a podcast episode. Once again, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you do have any questions, suggestions on future topics you'd like me to cover, or just want to chat about photography, you can reach out to me at photosbydlwe.com or at Mr. Meowpuss on Twitter. All these links will be in the show notes for this podcast, as well on thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you did enjoy this show and you want to hear more episodes from me, listen to much older content that I've recorded previously. You can find all that at tpepodcast.xyz or just thephotographyenthusiast.com. Thanks again for listening. Make sure to subscribe and you'll hear from me again soon.